obviously we really messed up that song. But it's really weird chords. But we like the words.
You guys did pretty good. Well, anyway, most of you know me. My name is Kendrick Spence. I'm a man of a few words, so this is a little bit different for me. Me and Erica, we're going to give our testimonies kind of in tandem. Obviously, we are very happy to do it. There's a lot that has gone on in our lives. Come this April, we've been married for 19 years. We've known each other almost 20, and it is truly amazing. It went by very, very fast, very, very quick. So anyway, I guess I will start by letting you guys know a little bit about me. I grew up in West Palm Beach, Florida, a place called Pleasant City. It was a ghetto by most standards in the United States. It was a pretty rough neighborhood, a lot of drug activity, a lot of gangs. Used to always get a kick out of watching Cops because they'd show Tamarind Avenue and Spruce Avenue and all these cops of West Palm Beach, Florida, a couple streets from where I lived. I mean, looking back at it now, I don't think that's something I want to brag about, but it was something different. My parents together, been together, they've been 42 years, I think, now, and always had a good life. We were very poor, but I didn't realize it because my parents did an amazing job. But I wasn't raised in the church. We didn't go to church. My mom tried to get us to go to church, but we made it such a difficult job for her, she kind of gave up. Sundays were football. That was what we lived for, is me, my two brothers, my dad. We would always be in the NFL, watching ESPN. That's what Sundays were about. That was what my life was about. Sports, chasing girls, things like that. So that's kind of how I viewed the world. I mean, I didn't know anything about God, but I did know there was something, there was something that my life did have a purpose. Couldn't put my finger on it, but even as a kid, I remember looking up in the sky and asking these questions. Why am I here? What is my purpose? There's more to it than this life. I mean, I couldn't tell you about God. I couldn't tell you about Jesus. I couldn't tell you about any of these Bible stories because I didn't know. And it's not because, well, I didn't understand it. I just never really had the chance to do that. And there were kids who did go to Sunday school that I used to laugh at because, you know, to me, church was a waste of time. And that was a lot of ignorance. And that's kind of my backstory because I went to church. When I graduated, went to the Army, and went to church one time. There was a bunch of girls who wanted me to go with them. I went. It was a Sunday, and we was in church for almost 3.5 hours. And I said, never again. So that's kind of where I'm coming from. This is before I met Erica, so I'll let her speak about her past
life. But your grandma?
Well, yeah, my grandma, on my mom's side of the family in North Carolina, they were in the church. They were really, let's say, they had lively church sessions. I mean, they were really into it, organ playing, people getting up, dancing, things like that. I do remember the handful of times I did go that they were into it. And my grandmother, she did pray a lot. Every time we would get ready to go, she would pray for us, and she would pray over each and every one of my brothers. So that was something, but like I said, it was one of those things where I didn't get it. I mean, I think I get it now, even that's 20 years after I've been saved, but there's still a lot I gotta go. It's, like I was telling Eric, it's a lifelong journey. So when they talk about this race, it's a lifelong journey. And I look back and I can still see where, when I thought I got it, I didn't get it. And I'm saying that, well, yeah, I get it now, but I'll probably be saying this 5 years from now that I still don't get it. So we'll see.
So I was the opposite, obviously, because I pretty much grew up with everyone here. But I'm going to cry. I'm going to try not to. So I grew up obviously going to church and a music ministry. And for me, it was very confining. I really prayed that God would help me not cry. So for me, I really saw God as very controlling. So when I got to leave home, I just felt free. Like, I didn't want to answer to anybody. I didn't want anyone telling me what to do. And I just felt like God was rules that I just never measured up. So then, of course, it kind of changes when you have kids. And then it was a lot more important to me. Like, I wanted my kids to go to church and go to Sunday school and to know the Lord. And he always tells it, he just went to church with me because we were dating. And, of course, Dad was a pastor, and we'd do Sunday dinner at Mom's and stuff. So it was like a whole day thing. And Poppy and Grandma and different ones there. So I think, well, do you want to say?
Okay, so as we're going to church, I mean, a lot of it for me was that, yes, I'm going because Erica was going, not because I went because, oh, I needed to go. This was when we were going to Salem. So eventually, over time, listening, Dad preach up there and listen to the songs and actually started to sing some of these songs. And then, you know, JV and Alyssa being as young as they were, and so they started watching VeggieTales. So a lot of it, because I didn't know the Bible. I really didn't. I mean, if you want to talk about somebody who was a blank slate to anything, that was me. And so as they're watching these videos and I'm starting to have these questions and I'm starting to ask Erica about it, and then I'm starting to read the Bible and find them and search them, you know, it was one of these things where it started to spark this curiosity in me. And so what I started doing was reading the Bible. I mean, you know, pieces of it, not a real whole lot, just kind of like, okay, well, they just saw this episode, what was this about? So I would do that. And so I remember one night we were going to bed, and so my question is, and I'm sure millions of people had this question, can a good man go to heaven? And so she started telling me about no, you know, because none of us are good, right? And for me, I'm looking at it like, what you mean? Nobody's good, you know? And
he said, I'm a good man. I take care of my family. Yeah.
You know, the common what people would think, like, oh, I'm a nice person. You know, I do this, I do that. Well, none of that matters. But at the time, because I didn't really understand it, that's where I was coming from, like a logical way of thinking. Like, well, I don't cheat. I don't, you know, hurt people. I don't rob. You know, I pay my taxes. I work. I'm good. I should be covered. But that's not how that works. And so we talked for a while that night, didn't we? So we talked anyway. So this was at the time I was working. Yeah, I was working at Sugar Creek. And so I was doing a lot of overnight work there. So I was missing some church because I was just so tired. We would come up and I just sleep. So, but I did decide to give myself over to the Lord. I got baptized. I remember right there, that little beach there.
Beaver Falls Beach.
Very cold water that morning. But it was a good thing.
It was summer, but it was still cold.
No, that water was freezing. But anyway, but it was a good thing. And, you know, I did feel different. I saw the world differently. You know, it's one of those things. But as time went on, years go by, and I can look back at it now, and I can say that my life really didn't change. I didn't change. Like, I was still listening to things I shouldn't have been listening to, still watching movies I shouldn't have been watching, still talking, smoking, drinking, all that stuff, you know, military dude. And my life didn't reflect that. And that's where, you know, talk about the book of James. And he says, you know, faith without works. And yeah, I had faith, but my life really wasn't showing a Christ-like love, like, at least not to me. At the core of it, I wasn't showing Christ in my life because I was still worldly. And, you know, it took me a long time to figure that out. I mean, I could sit here and I could tell Erica, like, oh, no, you know, I'm a good father, I'm a good husband, I work, I do this, I sacrifice, I always try to put others before myself. It was in a very superficial way. And I have to admit that I wasn't a very good husband. I wasn't a very good father.
That's not true.
because I was there, but I wasn't there, if you know what I mean. Like, just because we went to the park, I wasn't participating. You know what I mean? It's like I was at the park, but I really wasn't playing. Like, yeah, I pushed them on the swings, but I wasn't chasing them. I wasn't involving myself. I didn't never really take her anywhere because, oh, you know, I'm just so tired. I worked all week. I've been gone all week. You know, I'm going to the field, had drill. I was excuses. So I really never took Erica anywhere. And now I kind of look back and am ashamed of that because I wasted a lot of years just kind of, oh, I work and I'm tired, or, well, it's football on. I want to watch football today. Oh, I don't want to do this because I just don't feel like it. And, you know, it's just one of those things where I look back and it's just, I shake my head. And a lot of it had to do with immaturity. I was immature as a man, and I was immature as a believer. And a lot of that led up to just being here. And that's not how I should have been. And so fast forward some years, and so I get to this deployment. And so they're telling us we're going to Kuwait. And so Kuwait, from everybody saying, is like, oh, it's like summer camp. Don't worry about it. It's no big deal, you know, whatever. So we get ready. We go. This is January 2012. And we get to Camp Shelby, Mississippi. And so I've been praying a little bit more because I'm gone. And I'm hoping that, you know, Eric and the kids are okay. My little brother was up here for a little bit. And so 3 days after we get to Camp Shelby, Mississippi, we are told that we're going to Afghanistan. And that's a lot different than going to Kuwait. And so everybody is worried, everybody is scared, because, you know, over in Afghanistan, that's where a lot of IEDs and stuff like that is going on over there. So I'm praying, telling Erica about it. We're both sad because it's just one of those things. And, you know, God kind of got me out of that. Not on purpose. It was a lieutenant wanted to go for a run that morning. It was a Tuesday morning. We go in the morning. It's really dark out. And we're running. Long story short, I tear my Achilles tendon. Makes me non-deployed, right? And so they send me to Georgia to get healed up. Then they send me back. So this is now August. And I'm back and feeling a little guilty because a unit went overseas. I didn't, you know, whatever. But it's not my fault. It's severe injury. And so when I get back, you know, it's like a blessing. You know, God really worked. He protected me from going over there, because I do know some guys who have gone who aren't the same, who do struggle with alcoholism, who do struggle with anger, who do struggle with all these other issues. So I'm very thankful God protected me from that. So I get back, things are different. I'm working at the shop there on drum in the guard unit. And I'm treated a little differently, you know. Like, you know how some people are like, I don't know if they thought I was faking my injury or if they didn't respect me because I didn't make the deployment. I don't know. But things did get different, and things were sideways in a lot of ways. So I was, you know, dealing with medical and dealing with the unit and dealing with all this other stuff. And it got to the point where I was frustrated. I was really getting frustrated, really going through a hard time, really going through a lot of resentment to a lot of people, because people I thought who would try to help me out wasn't there trying to help me out. And I didn't really share this with Erica because I didn't want to burden her. And we were kind of going through some times, too, as far as financial and all these other things, you know, normal things that married people go through, and the kids and stuff like that. So I had a lot of this pressure to the point where a lot of it I just didn't want to deal with. And at the time, I mean, I was praying, but I wasn't praying right. I wasn't coming to God the right way. It was more of a, I wanted to escape. Like, I just want to get out of here. I don't like coming to work. started to hate these people I was working with because I would see how they would talk to each other. I would see, like, they would come in and say, hey, man, you know, I was at your birthday party. We had a good time. As soon as they would leave, they'd be like, screw that guy. I don't like this guy. This guy, he's this, and that. And I'm like, but you just saw Buddy with him 2 seconds ago. And it was a lot of that. And it was just like, I don't want anything to do with these people. And so I was looking for an escape. I know I couldn't quit my job. I needed the money, you know. But I was scared to move on to something else. So that's when a lot of my prayers were to God to just get me out of here. Just please get me out of here. I don't care how you do it. Just get me out of here. So that's when Texas came up. And I'm looking at it like it's just the answer to prayer, right? And, you know, we fought about it because I wasn't right in how I looked at it. I looked at it like, oh, God gave me this job so I can leave. I can get out of here. It was very selfish decision. And I should have been asking God to give me strength to get through it. I should have shared my burdens with Erica and with all of you. It was just something that I just didn't want to burden other people with. I was one of those who were like, yeah, tell me, I'll help you out. But I didn't want help from other people, you know what I mean? And I always thought that was like a weakness, like, oh, they can't see me as being weak. But you know what? Truth is, we all go through struggles. We all go through hard times. We all go through things that we just can't handle. And for me, that was a tipping point of frustration and just resentment and anger and just not quite understanding why things were going on the way they were. And kind of like when you're just unhappy with life, it just affects everything. Because I'm thinking that I'm holding this all in, but Erica noticed that my attitude was changing. I was short. I always looked upset. I always just didn't want to do anything, like worse than what I was. And so there was a signs there, but I was just like, I'll just deal with it myself. Anyway.
So for me, I went through a time of walking away from the Lord and just not wanting anything to do with that. And but still believing that I was a Christian. And through the time with Kendra coming to the Lord, it was something that brought me back to the Lord and raising the kids and stuff. And we say all the time, I think what, you know, we hate hard times, but through the hard times are really when we come to the Lord through desperation. And I feel like that's what Texas was for me. I think what really held us back from the Lord from a full submission, you know, death to self, I think was that one, he was seen as a good guy. I mean, you guys know him, like a good man. And so I think there wasn't the same need for God like maybe somebody else sees. And I guess it was pride. We didn't see it as pride. And I think for me, you know, always having the right answers. Like, I've heard all the Bible stories. I could tell you everything, you know. Not everything. I don't mean like my dad or anything or Pastor Paul, but I mean, we've done all the stories. I knew all the right answers. It was very much in my head, I think, more than my heart. And so when we had to go to Texas, that was really hard for me because it wasn't just selfish. Like, I mean, it was selfish too, but just thinking of the kids having to leave school and thinking of, like, I felt like we were filling a hole here at church. I felt like we were trying to be a light in Lowville, even as far as other kids coming to our house and trying to share the Lord, even through devotions when kids are there and we're doing family devotions and they're hearing it, you know, like some of the neighbor boys would choose to go in the dining room while we did them or whatever because they were there all the time. But they're hearing. And so I kind of felt like it wasn't just about leaving for us, like what it was for us, but like that God was really using us. And it was hard for me to imagine that he could use us in a new place like that. So for me, it was kind of different for both of us, but for me, that was where I really just had a new relationship, like a true relationship with the Lord, was just out of the hardest time of my life, moving to Texas and, you know, going, we had to get rid of a lot of our stuff to move. That was very emotional for me. And, yeah, I think just worrying about Javian leaving his junior year, which God has blessed that abundantly. And I feel like that mic's so loud. And so that was a time that I remember driving across from, we had stopped halfway through and stayed with Jessica and Annika for a few days, I don't remember how long. And so we're driving west, and I've never, it just was like you just kept going through another state and another state, I mean, I've just felt like we were driving off the edge of the earth. We had nowhere to stay, we didn't have a hotel booked, like we just were like flying by the seat of our pants with six kids. And that was very scary for me. So I feel like, and that was a time of listening to worship music out of desperation. Like I remember listening to Good Good Father as we're crossing the bridge into Dallas and you just see all the lights and it's nighttime and I'm like, we haven't had supper, where are we gonna stay tonight? We don't have a hotel. I don't even know like what suburb to look in. And I won't get into all that now, but God was in every single step.
Yeah. It's so
providing. Jaren, you can leave. Providing one hotel that turned us down. We had no idea how long we'd be in a hotel. We thought, oh, we'll find a place to rent in a week. Didn't happen. And so, of course, being eight of us, they wanted us to rent two rooms. And we're like, they weren't even conjoined. We're like, these are kids. Like, we can't just throw our kids in another room. And it was obviously twice as expensive. But through that phone call led to a different hotel. And when we called the Hilton whatever company, the one we tried to book wasn't even the one. They booked us in a different hotel, Homewood Suites. So we weren't even trying to get into that one. And it ended up having a kitchen with a dishwasher. And I mean, it only had the one bed, which kind of sucked for the kids, but we were very comfortable. And it had a pool and it had breakfast and dinner included 4 days a week. So, I think, well, anyway, so that was a really hard time. And it was hard because he was so happy and he loved his job and he loved what he was doing and he had been there 6 months already. And we were like, you know, like freaking out and the kids were just crying every day and mom and dad are crying every day and it was just really hard. So through our time in Texas, I think, and even now we sit here like, man, we really failed because here we are back in Lavalette, about to buy a house here in Lavalette again, and completely different people. That's kind of scary to us in different ways. And a lot of debt, a lot of loss of stuff. But through that time, we just never would have. God didn't have the opportunity to work in us if we hadn't left. And our kids' faith grew stronger. We grew closer as a family. And that stupid hotel, you know, we had the pool and stuff. I don't know. Like, there was a lot of good through the bad. And a lot more time for devotions. That summer before we left, we had been insanely busy. Like,
I remember we came back from our anniversary, got a call about this baseball team that we signed the little kids up for. Didn't have a coach.
Paul gave
them
our number.
So me and Erica decided to do it. And on top of that,
it was like,
these
kids won't get to play.
Javian was doing lacrosse.
Lissa summer camps, and they were in summer soccer. And
softball. Then we were doing all of that. I mean, we were just so busy, we were just gone all the time.
Rebecca.
And then that summer, Javian went to Hobart. Alyssa went to Clarkson for this girls'
Science
empowerment thing or whatever it was. And then Beaver Camp. And then it was just all the stuff that I think, didn't we?
We weren't having time for family devotions.
No, I mean, we were like getting home at like 9 o'clock at night and like hot dogs, hamburgers, whatever, and just go to sleep, do it all over again. And it was just such a busy schedule. The entire summer was just busy. And that was one thing that Texas did teach us, that
we had nothing.
Yeah,
we had nothing. We had no friends. We had
really, yeah, nothing. And it was just kind of just us. And we had time for devotions. And some of these videos you guys seen on Facebook with them singing, that was our devotional. We just would just go around, sit around with each other, and just sing. So that's one positive. Well, there was some positive. There was a lot of positives because it kind of showed us. The other thing we want to touch on, too, is churches, right? There was a church I was going to before they came down. It just happened to be that it was a walking distance. The only reason why I started going to this church, because I didn't have a car down there, didn't really know people, because the way this job was set up is that people kind of come and go. It's kind of like your contractor. You know, you work 10 hours or whatever it is, and you just leave. It wasn't a everybody shows up this one time. Everybody,
and it's so spread out that the people you go to church with are in different districts. I mean, there's just, it's hard to
have community. I had to get familiar
with
the transportation, the buses and stuff like that. And so obviously on the weekends, not a whole lot of buses are running. Sundays, barely anything is running on a Sunday. And so I had to find things in walking distance. So a lot of my time was spent walking to Walmart, walking like a mile and a half to the mall if I was bored, if I wanted to watch some movies or something like that. And this church was maybe a 10 minute walk from where I was. And so I go in, listen to it. I think the first time I went there was, I want to say it was Easter, I think. Oh, sorry about that. Anyway, so first time I get there is Easter. It seemed to be very friendly, you know, whatever. I was telling them my situation, family stuff. So I started going there and start just going there just because it's closer. So that was one thing that came from it, was when they finally got them down there, that's kind of gave us something to do. And we did start meet other families there and stuff like that. So it was a good thing. And God was in that too. Even though that church was some issues there with the leadership as far as what they were trying to do, you know. Yeah, it compromised a lot, and they were all about numbers, you know what I mean? And it was just kind of like a turnoff, but.
And money.
Yeah, well, money too. And they promote Santa Claus and Halloween. It's just not something we wanted to get into. But anyway.
But it gave us, the kids a youth group, it gave us Bible studies on Wednesday nights, where even in the hotel, it was like, the one thing we got out for, it was like groceries or that.
Yep.
So just feeling like the Lord put all those things in place. And we have awesome friends that we really miss through that time. And we had a stove and a microwave in the hotel, but not an oven. So
they had a grill outside.
Yeah, we'd grill outside some. And they, those really bad hailstorms had gone through in the hurricane just before we moved down. So the hotels were really full. And so a lot of them had been there the whole time, like us, like 7 weeks or whatever. But it's a lot to tell, but even in that, just the housing, just it just felt like, you know, and that was for me when I finally submitted to Texas, was just feeling like God was saying that he's everywhere. It doesn't have to be that we can only serve him in one place, and that it was more important that I submit to Kendrick, because for all the times he gives me my own way. he was really stubborn that we were going to Texas. And we had tried very hard to tell him all the reasons why. And so I just felt like God was just saying, just do it. Just go, and that he would take care of us. And he did. So that's all of Texas. But through all the moves, even coming to Vermont and back and I don't know, all of that. But unfortunately, the hard times are what brought us to a closer place to the Lord. That
I know for me, thing I learned during this time, especially in Texas, the first time I had a job where I was making good money. And then overtime was endless. You work as much overtime as you wanted. And I enjoyed that. And I got to telework, work from home, so I could go upstairs, work for a couple hours, come downstairs. Erica and Dominic were down there. We had breakfast. It was really nice. And by the time I was done working for the day, kids are coming home. So it was like perfect for me. You know, I only had to go in the office once a week. So it was really nice. The first time, because I didn't have to take the train. But that was the other thing, too. When we finally found a place in Fort Worth, the way I had to get to work was that Erica had to get up in the morning at 4. We had to leave by 4:30, right? We had to leave at 4:30 in the morning. She had to drive me 20 minutes to the train station. I had to get on this train by 5:05, something like that. 5:05, I had to get on this train. And basically, through a series of get to the train station, a couple buses, then I had to walk like, I think it was like almost like 4/10 of a mile to my job. I would get there every day at like 6:10, 6:15 or something like that. And so I would work my 10 hours, then I'll catch the bus, kind of in reverse, go back, and Erica would be there to pick me up at what, when I tried to get it closer to like 10 minutes from us. Anyway, I'd be getting home like around 8 o'clock, I'd be coming through the door. So I have to do that, you know, 4 days a week. And, you know, we made it work. It sucked, especially in the afternoon, in the evening when she had to come pick me up. Traffic, and it was just crazy, if you can imagine, like 3 million people driving at once. And so we had our times, and it was hard. It was getting exhausting. But when I finally got to telework, we didn't have to do that anymore. It was nice. I enjoyed looking at my paychecks because I was putting in all this work. And that was another thing, too. I had to work a lot. And even though I'm looking at the size of my paychecks, I really wasn't thinking about, all the money we have to spend out. So I had to do the overtime or to kind of keep us floating. So, you know, I don't know. It was really nice. And then when Vermont came up, that was something I was like, well, I'm thriving here. Javen seemed to be doing well, but everybody else was struggling. And so I looked at Vermont. I really never considered Vermont, but I looked at it, and I'm like, well, it's only 4.5 hours from Loudville. So I was like, well, maybe we can do the best of both worlds. Maybe we can't live in Loudville, but at least we'll be closer to where being 26 hours away wouldn't be such a big deal. So I did it, sent it in, got, you know, they accepted me. So I was like, well, God is telling us this is what we should be doing. So that's what I did. And obviously things worked out. It was vastly different. But I still feel like, and I tell Erica this day, that God had a reason for us coming back. Don't know what that reason is. I mean, a lot of it, I think, is because of Javen with his scholarship to Clarkson. Was maybe the reason why, because I told Erica, maybe this is not about us anymore. Maybe it's about the kids. And so looking at it and what we went through and my dumb decision to try to do this drive back and forth thing, at the time, you know, I liked this job. I wanted this job to work. It was like, this is my career now. This is what I got to do. But it cost me a lot. And cost me entire calendar year of the kids and me not being there. And it kind of made me have to reevaluate a lot of things about myself. I had to really look at myself in the mirror and find out what I was doing wrong. Like not the, well, you know, you're trying your best for the kid. It wasn't like that. It was me being selfish. It was me wanting to make this work for me because I always wanted a job that mattered. I wanted a job that helped. I wanted a job that I could be like, yeah, this is what I'm doing. And those are all selfish reasons. And so what it turned out to be was me choosing my job over my family. And I really never thought that that would ever be me, but it was me. And I had a series of long talks with God in that van going from here to Vermont, back and forth. We would talk because our phones didn't work, because Sprint, it had no service from up there. So you can imagine we would get these roaming fees, or the phone doesn't work, or Verizon saying that, yeah, this is not no service. And I'm just like, we're paying all this money for phones that don't work. So a lot of my conversations were with God. And he really revealed a lot to me about myself, where I was at, and how I had to change my priorities. And when you really take that look at yourself in the mirror through God's eyes, you see how ugly you are. There's nothing that you can hide from him. I mean, I can hide things from you all, and I can say all the right things and talk a good game, but with God is different. He knows. And so when you are in a place where everything you thought about yourself was just about an absolute lie, like, oh, I'm doing this for my kids, I'm doing this for my wife, I'm doing this for a few, no, you're not. You're doing this because it makes you feel important. You're doing this because you're scared to take a job that's less pay. You're doing this because you don't want to fail and say, yeah, I made a mistake 2-3 years ago. And for me, it's a lot of, I had to do something different. And I had to make some changes. But I couldn't make those changes on my own. So I had to give myself back to God in a real way. Not in a, all right, God, I'll just read some devotionals, but like, no, you need to be in the Word. I need to be praying. And honestly, this is the first time I've read through the Bible in, 7 days? We would have done it together.
We'll finish it in 7 days.
Yeah, we'll finish it in 7 days. First time I read through the Bible. Now, I've read New Testament, and I read through the Old Testament, but never straight through. And that's sad because I gave my life to God back in 2002. September 2002 is when I gave my life to God. And this is the first time I read through the Bible. And that's sad. But it is a race. And it's not about how you start. It's about how you finish. And I feel like for me, this year has been opening in a lot of ways. It made me reevaluate how I am as a father, as a husband, and as a Christian. And I know I need to be better. I mean, we all can. We all strive to be. But a lot of what I've been through, what we've been through, you know, we've had, it was a really dark time for us because we would fight. I didn't want to give this job up. I didn't. I tried to do everything to make it work. I tried to, convince Erica that, hey, man, just give me another month and I think I can get telework. And that just never happened. And when I finally realized that we truly can't afford for me to keep doing this, that's when I had to let go. And I didn't let go in the sense of, oh, I got to quit. It was the let go of, I choose my family. And God wouldn't, he never forced me out of the job, but he didn't make it easy. And he gave me a choice. I could have kept going. Could have took out another credit card. I could have, asked for money. I could have did a GoFundMe or something. But that wasn't the answer. And God is true. He is faithful. And I chose him, and I choose my family. And now I'm working a job I'm very happy with. I go to work 6:30 in the morning, get home. Well, I leave at 3, get home at 4. I'm going to Jakayla's games. I feel invested. I feel like, my kids are there. I get to see them do all kind of stuff, concerts. I'm not tired. I'm not sleeping all the time. I'm happy, and it's a joy to choose him and for him to be in my life. And a lot of that came through resistance. It came through me trying to be more like the world, thinking that oh, I need this job. I got to make this money. You got to make X amount. I got to do this. I got to do that. No, you don't. You just have to trust God. Yes, it's scary. It's scary to just let go and let him take over. But you know what? It's one of the best things I ever did in my life. I don't regret it not one bit. And I can sit here and honestly say that, honestly, if I had to work for minimum wage to feel this joy in my heart, I would. I really would. The amount of money I make now doesn't matter. The title of my job doesn't matter. What matters is me being able to be with my family at night, get to see them grow up, and instead of just being there, I'm involved. And come a long way, still got a long way to go. You know, none of us are perfect. But like I was telling Erica too, you know, one of the things when I had this conviction in my heart with God back in January last year was Amazing Grace. Like, I knew the words to the song, but it didn't mean what it did now, then, and what it means now to me. Because I am very, very glad and fortunate that I serve a God who is all about second chances. And I feel like I'm looking obey. So it's been very, very hard, difficult road for us and for me, especially this transformation. And so I know I've been talking a lot, and I'm supposed to let you talk too. So it's just a lot that we've had to go through. But honestly, I'm glad to be here. I'm glad to be back. Before, I was so ready to just be like, oh, it's snowing, it's cold, I don't want to deal with this. I want to be somewhere south. Honestly, I don't care about the weather. Weather doesn't bother me no more. You know, it just is what it is. I'm happy to be where God has me. I'm here for a reason. Don't know what that reason is still, but that's okay. He'll reveal it in this time. But I'm happy to be here. I'm glad to be back. I'm glad to be sharing my story with you guys. And you all have known me, Erica, and the kids ever since we started, a lot of you. And I'm very thankful. I love all of you. And anytime you guys need anything from me or you need help doing anything, please let me know. Yes, I know we're in Governor. We're trying to make it back to Lawville, but just a phone call away. And I know you guys are the same for us. You guys have been there. Your prayers have been very uplifting. And I'm very thankful. There's a lot of joy in my heart. Sorry.
I was just going to say what he's saying about reading through the Bible. I think that's it for both of us. That was, I think I kind of had the attitude too of like, I've read it. You know what I mean? Like, it just feels like you're not going to get anything more from it. But every single time, something comes back different, and God reveals something more. So, yeah, 18 years. We were married in April, but this is the first time, sad to say, that we do devotions together every day. We've never done that. We always did family devotions. So, yeah, this is our first time reading through together. And I guess, I don't know why I feel compelled to say this, but I guess we feel that way even about the church in Governor. Like, we are very thankful for them. It was hard to not be with you guys, but we knew we couldn't come to Lawville every week from Governor. And I guess that's my point, is just, like, Texas can look like a mistake, and Vermont can look like a mistake, and all these things, but how God worked through every single one, and that something good came from it, a lesson, growth, putting us in places to make friends, or to witness. I hope we left something wherever we went, and just thankful for you guys. I mean, you're our family, and I guess that's what I want to say about Governor, is just, we loved that church up there. We're very thankful for the year and a half, well, almost year and a half that we've been in Governor. They've been some great friends. They've been a youth group. They are a large, they have a lot of big families. They homeschool. And they have very much included us in family gatherings and stuff like that. But it's kind of sad to see that we kind of went through this whole thing. The reason we walked away with their pastor coming out in a teaching series about creation, like discounting Christianity or creation.
What do they call it, progressive?
He's a theistic evolutionist. Oh, yes. And so that was really disappointing to us. So I get, and that was part of it too, was that's even where part of that we feel like the Lord is leading us back here. So as sad as it was to leave that church where he does use all of that, we're thankful for how church has always been a fellowship, like a, in Texas and up here. But it does make us even more grateful for Dad's preaching and Pastor Paul. And Pastor Paul's been, he was my youth leader when I was a teenager. And, yeah, and always been for our kids. And he's the junk food fairy, we call him, because when when Kendrick's been deployed or, you know, all these times that he's been gone, and I know he's done it for Rebecca, too. She loves it, too. And that he drops off, you know, Hostess cake, like he just comes in with groceries. It's kind of hard to call them groceries because none of it's meal stuff. It's like Hostess, you know, all the kids, the, if the kids went grocery shopping, they're like juice and soda. And, but we love it. We love, he's so thoughtful with that. And I shouldn't point just him out because, I mean, all of you guys have done something like that for us, but it makes us really thankful for the, I always say meat and potatoes teaching just of my dad, always, and Pastor Paul, too, and I should say Don, for us and for our kids, because that was really hard for us. The kids then couldn't go to the youth group up there either because he was the youth pastor, and, you know, Jessica and Rick were sharing yesterday, they were up at the house, that they're going through a lot of that. Not in their church directly, but their best friends, very charismatic, a lot of what we are dealing with up there. And again, that, you know, just that we have to make creation itself, but God fit the box of the world, and it doesn't work that way. Yeah. So we are very thankful. Kendrick wouldn't be a Christian without you guys.
That's right.
And the church collectively. And for us, too, through that hard time and our kids. And, yeah, we're just really thankful. So I just wrote down a couple things. Dad always says it, too, but Satan's number one trick, and that's what he did with us, too, is, you know, just we always think, we tell the kids, we always think of, like, you know, God's this way and Satan's this way, and they're polar opposites, which they are. But what's sneaky about it is that Satan actually runs right alongside God, and he just twists it enough. Like, even with Kendrick talking about the money, which he's a lot harder on himself than I am on him with that. But, you know, that came from a good place. That came from wanting to bless our family and to bless other people. It wasn't as selfish as he makes it out to be. It's not like he was like, oh, I'm, you know, now I can go on hunting trips. No offense to anyone that does that. But we don't know anyone, so it would be very expensive. So yeah, that has been shown very real in our lives. What I said about being raised in a Christian home, that just made me feel like feeling like you've finished the race, which it's never done, and that like you come to a point like, okay, now I'm there, because that never happens. And again, you know, just a good man or a good marriage or good parents or whatever. I mean, I'm not saying that's what we are, but that when you feel like you're good, then you don't feel a need for the Lord. And how I just wrote, it's really easy to ask why over the last few years. It just feels like we almost lost our marriage. We almost lost our family. We feel like we've lost so much financially and emotionally it's been, but if you look back at each decision where you can just feel where God either helped us avoid something really horrible or brought us through something really horrible. So we feel like God has really shown us there's a big difference between being saved. I think everybody comes to that point like, you know, I believe this. I need the Lord in my heart. But it doesn't always translate into a true death of self. Just a, like Paul, just like a knock you right on your butt, like you're done. And
because I feel like, too, that
thanks, Jaron.
We come to God in a logical sense, like it makes sense to us, but it's a different thing to feel it in your heart, to actually truly have it in your heart. And I think for me, logically, I came to that conclusion back in 2002. But
like we felt like we were raising our kids, especially against the norm of society, really teaching them to love the Lord, to be sold out for Christ. We always say raising kingdom soldiers for the cross. And like Kendrick said, then when you really just let the Lord break you down, it was all nothing really. It just seems like, and maybe he'll keep doing that. I don't know. Maybe some people have multiple conversions that way. And for me personally, just feeling like through all of this that God has, one, showed me, like that's what I finally kind of broke down with the Texas thing, was just, one, Kendrick has never shown himself unworthy to take care of us. He's done a lot of crap. I always think of my dad pumping gas with a doctorate. Not that he's ever made a big deal about that, because that's what he had to do to take care of his family, and Kendrick's always done that for us too. And I'm thankful for that and that example. And I feel like, totally lost my train of thought when I was going with that. Oh, that the Lord was just saying, do you really not trust Kendrick to take care of you? And even if you don't trust him, do you really not trust me? So I felt like the last few years, even though in earthly terms just looked like a disaster, we look like idiots probably to a lot of people. Sometimes I'm not sure. And but where God has just, that there's a place that you come to with him when you can't do it without him. And that's something new for us.
Yeah, and you can't make these transformations without him. Like, we can try all we want to say, okay, I'm going to wake up, I'm going to be better. You know, those people listen to those affirmation tapes and CDs and stuff. I mean, like, I think they work on a very surface level, but to truly have that change in your heart, you have to give it to God, and you have to trust him. Like me, I came to that point last year that, hey, oh, I'm going to give it to you, Lord. I'm going to truly give it to you, take the wheel. And when push came to shove, when I had to truly trust him about resigning this job or not.
Without another job.
And I just totally trusted him. And honestly, it was the best thing I ever could have done. Because that's the whole thing about, you know, holding on to your life. You lose it, you let it go, you gain it. And I gained so much from doing that. And I just would like to just say too that I hope you all, I'm sure you all have been through what we've gone through in different ways. But I do hope that you guys just, if there's something you could take away from our struggles or our coming around to all of this, is that just trust in God, man. He's there. He's always there. Even when you don't feel him there, he is there. And it's one of those things where it is an amazing feeling to just put your trust in him. And I almost feel like, well, not almost, I do feel like I can take that leap off a cliff and he'll catch me. And there is no question about it.
And just talking with the kids about just not looking for, the point of life isn't like what's going to make you happy, or this job will make me happy, this person will make me happy, if we move south we'll be happy, if we have more money we'll be happy, but that God's joy really has nothing to do with happiness. I've heard that a million times too, but really experiencing that, yeah, that's all I have to say too. So we have a lot of verses that, you know, just a verse you can hear 1,000 times, but then just if it goes with a certain time, but James 1, 2 through 4, dear brothers and sisters, when troubles of any kind come your way, consider it an opportunity for great joy. For you know that when your faith is tested, your endurance has a chance to grow. So let it grow, for when your endurance is fully developed, you'll be perfect and complete, needing nothing. So James has, we've done a couple studies on James this year. So do you want to say anything else? I'll call the kids up.
No, I think I've talked enough.
Can you go? What? Yeah, we have to do another song, unless we're out of time. Would you rather we didn't do another song? We'll get them, Liz. Do you want to?
Yeah, Liz. Anyway, we thank you guys for allowing us to share our story, our testimony, and we do appreciate it. We do love each and every one of you. And you guys are amazing.
Thank you, guys. I know that takes a lot of courage. You get the idea that they were just very real with you, and that's what we're about here, is just being real with God. And I want to just share a little bit from Matthew 26. And I'm just wondering if Bill and Brother Don, would you serve the bread to us here in just a second? If you wouldn't mind, I'll hand that to you here. But Matthew 26:26. As they were eating, Jesus took a loaf of bread and asked God's blessing on it. Then he broke it in pieces and gave it to the disciples, saying, "Take it and eat it, for this is my body." And he took a cup of wine and gave thanks to God for it. He gave it to them and said, "Each of you drink from it." And obviously, this is something the Lord put in place. On my way into church today, I was thinking about Emmaus Bible Fellowship, and one of the first sermons Pastor Bruce did when we were gathering as a new body of believers is shared from Luke 24 about how the Emmaus believers were on that road. And just a verse here, I think it's pretty cool. It says Jesus is with them. He's just talked with them on this road. They didn't recognize him. It says God prevented them from knowing who he was. As they get, it's time for dinner, and it says, by this time they were nearing Emmaus and the end of their journey. Jesus would have gone on, but they begged him to stay the night with them since it was getting late. So he went home with them. And then look at this, verse 30 of chapter 24 of Luke. As they sat down to eat, he took a small loaf of bread, asked God's blessing on it, broke it, then gave it to them. And verse 31, suddenly their eyes were opened and they recognized him. And at that moment, he disappeared. And that's what we're about here at Emmaus, is we want to break bread with each other. We want Jesus to break open his word every week. And we trust that through the Holy Spirit that happens here. And like Kendrick, like Erica, their eyes are open and they realize this is what life is all about. It's about being real with God and just saying, let's have that relationship that he wants so badly. And the other verse I'm just going to say as we go over to the Lord's table is Revelation 3:20. He says, "Behold, I stand at the door and knock. If any man open the door, I'll come in and sup with him." And that means I'll break bread with you. I'll fellowship with you. And God wants a relationship with you. He's a perfect gentleman, though. He'll offer, he'll knock. He's not going to force his way in. That's why salvation is the way it is. There's no force. He could have made us all drones, right? And that say, "I love you, Jesus. I love you, Jesus." But he didn't do that. He gave us a choice, because love has to be free. And so he's bestowed that love on you. If you have accepted the Lord as your Savior and count him as your Lord and Savior, then you're welcome to participate with us in this. If you still have yet to do that, we would love to talk with you after the service and help you just ask the Lord into your heart. So just see someone after church, myself or Pastor Bruce, and we'll be glad to pray with you. But let's move to the Lord's Supper. 1 Corinthians 11:23 says, "For this is what the Lord himself said, and I pass it on to you just as I received it. On the night when he was betrayed, the Lord Jesus took a loaf of bread." And I just want to stop there and say, you know, Romans 5:8 says, God shows his love toward us in that while we were still enemies of Christ, he died for us. And, you know, if we just say, oh yeah, Judas betrayed him, guess what? Every single one of us betrayed Jesus. So it says on the night when he was betrayed, and go ahead and include yourself in that, the Lord Jesus took a loaf of bread, and when he had given thanks, he broke it and said, "This is my body, which is given for you. Do this in remembrance of me." Verse 25 says, "In the same way he took the cup of wine after supper, saying, 'This cup is the new covenant between God and you, sealed by the shedding of my blood. Do this in remembrance of me as often as you drink it.' For every time you eat this bread and drink this cup, you are announcing the Lord's death until he comes again." I'll just say this, I guess the youth pastor in me wants to include this, thank you very much, that I can remember being a little boy and, you know, having accepted the Lord and been baptized, and I understood how sacred this ceremony was, but I saw some kids that were just fooling around, and they had, you know, maybe gotten a little bread and some juice, and they were not doing this in a respectful way. And I just want to include this warning because it is important. So if anyone eats this bread or drinks this cup of the Lord unworthily, that person is guilty of sinning against the body and the blood of the Lord. That is why you should examine yourself before eating the bread and drinking from the cup. For if you eat the bread or drink the cup unworthily, not honoring the body of Christ, you're eating and drinking God's judgment upon yourself. That is why many of you are weak and sick, and some have even died. So again, just I'm not trying to be too lengthy with the service or anything here, but we do want to always include a reverence for this. Yes, we remember what Jesus did. This was a very serious, painful sacrifice he made, and it was after 33 years of living every day for us as a pure sacrifice. So please do it seriously and drink the blood of Christ. And it says, when they had sung a hymn, they went out, and I think we've covered this several times before. Pretty sure Pastor Bruce is the one that opened this teaching to us, but it was probably Psalm 118, one of the psalms that they were singing. Just wondering if we could sing that now. Imagine Jesus on the way to the cross saying, "This is the day that the Lord has made." Could we sing that? "This is the day, this is the day that the Lord has made, that the Lord has made. We will This is the day that the Lord has made. We will rejoice and be glad in it. This is the day. This is the day that the Lord has made. Pam, you want to lead us?
Yesterday, today, forever, Jesus.